starts drinking coffee as early as anybody and keeps going. But he has that ability to connect with different people on different levels. That's a leadership thing. It's also a personality thing. It's who he is, how he's wired. And I think the NHL now is exactly the kind of place where a personality like Rallis will flourish.
Winnipeg Jets coach Paul Maurice, just thinking, at the World Championships, Team USA plays today. Canada plays today.
Yep, quarterfinal round.
Yeah. And Ralph Kruger would be over there getting set to meet with Sam Reinhart and Jack Eichel unless it's already happened?
Yeah, exactly.
So he's got his meeting with Botterill and Reinhart and Eichel. And the fact that he's meeting with those two, does it mean anything to you? I mean, Eichel's a no-brainer, but Reinhart, sometimes we occasionally suggest that maybe he's a piece that they move, but is it a coincidence?
Hold that question.
Okay.
Let's get
Montour
headlines.
Came back. Maybe Montour meets with him if he's still there.
Yeah.
It could just be the players that are there.
Hold that thought.
All right.
Headlines. Bills are on the practice field today. It's an OTA, you know, the voluntary workouts continuing, closed to the media. So Sal's going to be at home, I guess. The Bills had some roster moves yesterday. We have details at WGR550.com. The owners met and decided to give the competition committee the go-ahead to tweak the challenge rule for pass interference. It's expected the league will make it a coach's challenge for the entirety of the game. No booth review challenges of offensive or defensive pass interference in the latter stages of the game. The league decided not to change the overtime rules. The divisional playoffs are going to be at 3 and 6:30, later kickoffs this coming season. Cleveland gets the 2021 draft. Kansas City will host the 2023 draft. Toronto and Milwaukee tonight in the NBA playoffs. Home court has been the key in the first four games of that series. They're tied at 2. Yanks beat Baltimore. The Jays lose in 13 to Boston. Vlad Jr. hit another home run, though. The Mets beat Washington. The Bisons were shut out in Rochester. Michigan names John Beilein's successor, and they tap into the Fab Five and bring in Juwan Howard as their new basketball coach.
Those are your sports headlines, and they're brought to you by Northtown Honda. Come experience the best way to purchase a car. Easy to get to from all points in Western New York. Start shopping today at northtownhonda.com. Another player that the Sabres have been reportedly interested in talking to at the World Championships maybe is a player named Jonas Moser. It was confirmed by the Journal du Jour that he will talk with the Canadiens and the Sabres before the 2019 NHL draft. He's eligible for the draft this year. And he played in the Swiss National League this year and put up 7 points in 43 games. But for an 18-year-old, that's all right.
Okay. I'm into all comers at this point in terms of players for the Sabres. So what was your question? Do I think it's coincidence? Probably.
Not that it's a coincidence.
He's over there, they're over there.
Does it mean that Reinhart is untouchable and a part of their future? Or is it just, hey, the players that are there are going to meet the coach?
Yeah, I think there's two guys that are untouchable.
Dahlin and Eichel.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Reinhart's. I like Reinhart, but there's no way I'd call him untouchable.
He's certainly good value right now.
Yes, and if you actually did want to move on from Reinhart, now would probably be the time. You know, he still is somewhat cost-controlled from an RFA. He's not a UFA. He won't be for, a few more years?
It was a two-year deal.
Oh, two-year deal. But he'll be a UFA after this deal?
No, RFA.
Yeah, okay. He just came off his best year. So, I mean, I'm not trading him, but no, he's not an untouchable guy. So I'm going to guess, hey, Kruger's over there. If Montour was there, maybe he would have met with him. Brayton, there's nobody else over there, right? It's just these guys.
Montour came back.
Yep.
So it's just
Risto didn't go. Yeah. Dahlin didn't go.
So he's probably just figuring, you know, it makes sense to meet with Eichel. The guy is the captain, but he's probably figuring just meet with the guys that are there.
I mean, they could easily fly to Finland to meet with Ristolainen if they really truly want to.
Is future Buffalo Sabre Jonathan Huberto over there?
No. Okay. Yeah, I don't think he is.
Right. I suppose he could just start doing the world tour. You know, Ralph Kruger could just start flying wherever he wants to fly and start meeting with guys. You know, maybe he can get like all the guys in Europe to get together in one centralized location.
Have like a European Congress for the Sabres.
Yeah, they all meet in one city, pick a lovely city in Europe that make it a nice holiday weekend for the players. And you get to meet with Ralph Kruger and do the same thing in the States. Grab maybe even Canada, too, or whatever. Maybe whatever. You just it's a conference of Sabres players in the U.S., in Canada, and in Europe. And just get them all together and they can speak with the head coach. But, I don't know how he's going to do that. You know, I think it'd be a great idea. If I were Ralph Kruger, I'd love to be able to do more than just a phone call. I'd love to be able to meet with guys face-to-face somehow before – everybody gets together for training camp in August. I like the idea of, and especially with everything we've heard from the guests we've had on about Ralph Krueger, about his personality, his energy, his communication skills, and all these things. I think it'd be a nice leg up if you could somehow line it up where he can talk to the players before the before they get here for training camp. 803-0550 to join us this morning. 888-550-2550. I've got some football things I want to run by you. I was reading Peter King earlier this week and his column at NBC Sports. What he did was, and I'm not going to go through everybody. He talked to like 25 different people for different things to change in the National Football League. There's no way I'm going through all these. So I just highlighted a few of them because I think they're more interesting discussions. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this a little bit. So we will start with Dean Blandino. So Dean Blandino used to be the guy, the supervisor of officials, okay? So he was the guy in New York overseeing everything, replays, correcting errors, all that stuff. That was his job. He no longer works for the NFL. He was the former vice president officiating. Here's what Dean Blandino told Peter King. Make every play replay reviewable. Again, this is the guy. Let me at least tell you what he said. No, right? I was shocked because this is the guy whose job it was to oversee all this stuff. He wrote, I've come full circle on this since I worked in the league. I now think coaches should be able to challenge anything they want. Don't increase the number of challenges. Put the onus on the coach to save his challenges. This would simplify the rule. You won't have to wonder what's reviewable and what isn't. They've added pass interference. We're going to see more of this creep into the game. By not opening it all up, we're just delaying the inevitable.
Okay, so
No more challenges.
The idea is...
You challenge anything, but you're limited to two. And I think you get a third if you win the first two.
Are there still booth reviews? On every turnover and on every scoring play and on every play inside the final 2 minutes?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I do like...
My guess is they would keep booth reviews on scoring plays at the minimum.
I tend to think that simplicity is often easier. Whenever we would talk about kicking the puck into the net, my thought was allow it across the board so we don't have to bother with the reviews.
Because you have the review of was there a distinct kicking motion?
Right. Who cares? If it goes in, it goes in.
Yeah.
You know, that's
the hand
not,
pass a little bit too.
Right, exactly. It's not like it doesn't have any problems, but at least it's easy. So if his suggestion is
everything,
we don't even have a stipulation about what is reviewable and what is not. I'm the coach and I could say, I'd like to challenge the illegal substitution before that play. Okay, there it is.
It's not a bad idea.
You're using one challenge.
Right.
We'll check it if you're wrong.
And you're not, in theory.
You're streamlining things.
Right. It wouldn't necessarily stop the game more because you're not adding challenges. It's really not a bad idea. You know, again, if there's a blatant holding call that's missed and it costs a touchdown or something, or, you know, the other team gets a touchdown, but it shouldn't have stood because they held your pass rusher.
But you only get two. Every time you get it right, do you not lose it?
If you get both of them right, you gain a third, and
it. Why would I only get that many? Still a problem.
That is the current rule in the NFL.
Everything
now you'd
is
have to
reviewable.
Have a different discussion.
Everything's reviewable, and there are no limitations, and I'm never wrong about my challenge.
There's no
reason I should ever run out.
But because the league still doesn't want to get to the point where they keep stopping the game, even if you're right. You hope there aren't that many challenges. You hope there aren't that many blatantly missed calls.
I understand.
But they can't keep stopping the game.
That's not the coach's problem. If I challenge three times and all three times I'm right, there's not a scenario I should get punished for it.
I guess my question would be, can we definitively say this is the end of the discussion after pass interference? Like, we'll never find another moment or another call. Well, now someone will say, look, coaches have already asked. Belichick's done this. I think Rex Ryan did this years ago, too. They've already been asking for years to have every play subject to review, limited by challenges. I would ask you, are we going to go through this again? This offseason, it was pass interference. What's the next penalty or the next key moment that happens in a big playoff game that leads to a discussion of, okay, now we got to add holding. Now we got to, they missed a false start. Now we got to add, or we're going to have an eye in the sky. I think we're going to continue having this discussion with missed calls. So it's not a bad idea to just say, screw it. Let's just open it all up. You still get limited, though.
Or close it all down.
Well, that was Pete Carroll's suggestion, actually, in that same piece by Peter King. Pete Carroll said, and he's a good guy because he wears Air Monarchs, he said, let's just scrap it all. It's never going to happen. You know, once you bring instant replay in, there's no way that it would ever go back to nothing. But I'm not a fan of all the challenges, but I think he makes a really good point. If you limit the challenges just to say, let's just stop having these debates every year. Okay, now the competition committee wants to look at holding. And just open it up and limit it to the two and the third if you get it right. How about this one? Eric Winston, president of the NFL Players Association, former offensive lineman in the National Football League, says, seed the playoffs by record, not division title.
Good by me.
Right. So if you got a wild card team that's 11-5 and a division winner went 9-7, the division winner is no longer guaranteed a top four seed in a home game.
Sold.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. I don't think the discussion will be, are you ruining the divisions and all that stuff?
No. You still get a guaranteed playoff spot. You just don't get a guaranteed home game.
Yeah. So why award a team that's in a weak division with a guaranteed home game when a wild card team in a tougher division has to go on the road?
Okay, I'm good with that one.
Okay. Let's see. You've actually brought this up. Rich Eisen from NFL Network. Give the ball back to the offense on fumbles through the end zone.
Totally. 100% should be done.
He writes.
Give it to him at the 20-yard line. It should not be a turnover.
Yeah, he wrote, essentially, why should a ball fumbled out of bounds at the 1-inch line stay with the offense, but a fumble that occurs 2 inches further down the field, 1 inch into and through the end zone, go to the defense?
100%.
Give the ball back to the offense.
I agree.
I don't know that it's ever even come up for discussion with anybody.
Give it to him at the 20, so there's still a penalty.
Yeah.
Maybe diving over the end zone or diving for the pylon.
Yeah.
Well, it went out of bounds. Looks like it's 1st and 10 back at the 20. Make it the other kind of touchback. Yeah. All right. I like all these.
Okay.
None of them are happening, though, right?
No. You know what? And do you ever remember them even bringing up the fumble discussion? I don't even remember it coming up.
For sure.
Has it come up?
Yeah, we've talked about it.
No, I mean the league.
Oh, no, I haven't known them to.
Here's a rule. Because every year when the competition committee meets in, what is it, March, I think, at the owners' meetings, they always send out an email to the media, and it lists all the different things that are being brought up. I mean, this thing takes forever to read. I don't ever recall it reaching the point where the league actually said, hey, we need to talk about the fumble situation, about fumbling the ball out of bounds and going to the defense. I know you bring it up on the show, but I don't see that changing. I don't think anyone's ever brought it up. I don't think there's a movement to get that changed. No, I don't think that's going to happen. Hunter Henry, ensure each team gets a possession in overtime. They should have. I don't know why they keep sitting on the current rule. They're not going to look at it this year. They might look at it next year. They're not changing the overtime rules. They should just guarantee a possession regardless. Touchdown, whatever. I think both teams should get a possession in overtime. They're not going to do that. There's only one or two other things. Let's see here. Oh, you know what? I had a stat for you, too, actually, in one of the discussions. Scott Hansen from the NFL Red Zone Channel, who does a really nice job, by the way, on the Red Zone Channel. Make the onside kick a real play again. It's the 4th and 15 discussion, which we've brought up. You've brought it up. You're good with that, right? 4th and 15, give the offense a chance instead of having an onside kick. Stat of the day. He's got some numbers on this I thought was interesting. So last year, with all the rules changes with the kickoff, they really almost killed the onside kick.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, there were just 4 successful onside kicks in 52 attempts, 7%. In the 9 seasons prior, the success rate was 16%. So they basically cut it in half.
They killed it.
Yep. So 7% onside. 4th and 15, teams that went for it on 4th and 15 over the last 5 years, what do you think the percentage was of success rate, 4th and 15, last 5 years?
14%.
22%. So the onside kick is at 7, and the 4th and 15 is at almost just a shade under 22%. It was far more successful than right now recovery of the onside kick.
Are there any way out of the box suggestions here? I mean, a lot of these are ones that have already been discussed. And
onside kick, ownership. Some of them we wouldn't even give a hoot about. Here. Okay, you want out of the box? Let's see. Who's Mark Leibovich? Chief National Correspondent, New York Times Magazine says, put bad ownership up for a public vote. If your team's bad, you can vote the owner out. I'm going to guess that doesn't happen.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, that's out of the box, right? That's outside of the box. Replay into the living rooms. No. Richard Deitch wants a Beckham cam. You know, a player wears a camera on the field and on the sideline.
How about what Chris Long wants? He tweeted yesterday that he used marijuana throughout his career. And that one of the reasons he openly said it was to try and kick the stigma of it, of players using it to help themselves through...
As medication,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, as whatever, medication, recreationally, whatever, that it would help a player get through.
Don't you feel they'll do that in the next CBA?
Possibly.
That was one of the suggestions from Lindsey Jones.
Yes, it's a very good one.
Be
Chris
more progressive.
Long, he admitted to regular marijuana use during his career, explains how he beat the tests, too. You get tested, once a year for marijuana. The performance-enhancing drug stuff, that's random. But the marijuana test is once a year, which is, by the way, it's one of the reasons that when a guy gets suspended for marijuana, the teams get so mad. Like, a lot of times you know it's coming. It's only once.
Oh, okay. It's not a random.
No, it's once a year.
Okay.
Here's what he says.
That would anger me, I suppose, if you know it's
right.
coming. Sure.
We've argued about this a lot. Not you and I, but football circles have. That with marijuana, it was a big part of his regimen. He was able to evade detection because the league's test is so easy to beat. It's once a year at a prearranged date.
Wow.
Players stop using marijuana, take the test, and then resume it.
Right.
Which is, you know, one of the things that I can remember being at training camp one year and Darius was suspended and a woman called and screamed at us for being irresponsible. But the point is that I was trying to make was a lot of your favorite players do it and you just don't know it.
Yeah.
And you're better off for not knowing it. So here's Chris Long, like, yeah, I did it all the time. I just stopped, took the test, I'm good for a year, and I'm back on it. And here's Chris Long, who's, what, Walter Payton Man of the Year last year for the NFL.
Was he?
Yeah.
He won it?
He won it, and he won't ever wear the patch because he's retired.
Okay.
So, you know, he says, quote, in that month or two, you stop. You're going to reach for the sleeping pills, the painkillers. You're going to reach for the bottle a little bit more. If you're serious about players not using, you'd be testing more often. I hope they go the opposite direction and realize how arbitrary that one test is. His point being, if you cared about this,
I thought it was
you'd
random.
Test every month.
I thought it was random.
It is not. It is,
you know,
once a year.
Guys complain about how the random testing, right? Some guys get targeted. Who was the?
Eric Reed.
Right, Eric Reed was targeted like a ton of times.
That's for performance-enhancing drugs.
Okay.
It's not for marijuana.
Yeah, I just figured it was one of the many things they randomly tested for. I didn't think they had a. It seems you would be defeating the purpose of the test if I knew the day it was coming.
Chris Long, former New England Patriot.
Yeah, but not that long. He wasn't there that long. He wasn't there long enough to get the Patriot way. I think you have to be there for like 3 or 4 years.
I mean, now that you know that. Now
I would assume they'll relax
now that you know that they test once a year.
That's silly.
And then everybody can just pick up their use of marijuana.
Right.
You know,
why even test?
The studies, the numbers of what percentage of players would be using.
Well, it's pointed out that it's legal in states where there are NFL franchises.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And the NHL, well, we've gone through this a bunch. Like, back when the Olympics were around, it's all about the levels, too. In the NHL, they test, and it's confidential.
Yeah.
They only test to find out how many players are using. You're never punished for it. But the NFL, it's one of the things that Chris Long is pointing out here that, you know, not only remove the stigma, but the NFL damages its own product by consistently suspending these players for what amounts to, it's not quite a clerical error, but it's a irresponsibility of scheduling error.
Yeah.
Now, you tested positive on July 7th, you're suspended. Well, you didn't test positive on July 7th. Mwah! See you next year.
That's odd. I just assumed it was random. I think I don't know enough about it from the medical benefits, but if it's a legitimate, you know, if this is a legitimate aid to the players at a time when the league is talking about health and safety for years now and has made rules changes and done so many things to try and help the health and safety of the players, if there are medical benefits to it, why not?
Even if there aren't. Even if it's recreational.
Sure. It's not considered a, you know, I don't think most fans would consider this, hey, that's definitely worthy of suspending a guy for 25% of the season. Yeah, I don't know if they'll do anything.
25%.
I would think the next CBA. I would assume in the next CBA that's something that the league would look at and go, okay, let's just change this.
Unless they want to use it as some sort of thing to hold up.
I don't know. You think that's that? Is that?
I mean, look what the
NHL uses that as a bargaining chip?
The NHL holds the Olympics against the players, right? In bargaining,
yeah,
you'll hold
do.
Anything
yeah.
they want, you've got to hold against them.
I guess you got to figure out what's important to the players. Like, if they think this is a big deal, then yeah, I suppose the NFL would use it as a bargaining chip.
Right. The NFL is probably going to pretend it's important to them, but I think that's part of Chris Long's point. He's like, it's not. It's not important to them.
Yeah.
It's what? It's a lever of control that they don't even use that much of.
Why do they, if you're the NFL, I still can't get beyond the, if you think it's important enough to suspend for use of this particular drug, why would you pre-schedule an exact date for the test and only do it once a year?
You don't care.
You would do it multiple times. You would do it in season. You would do it out of season. You would definitely do it in season, in theory, because you don't want these guys doing this stuff during the season. But you would also do it out of season if you really wanted to be hard asses about this. And you would do it randomly.
Yeah. Sean writes in, thank you, Sean, for a clarification. It's once a year until you're caught. And then they can test you whenever.
Okay. All
so right. The point is, stay out of the program.
Yeah.
Just don't get that first one, and you're golden for your entire career.
Okay. Yeah, that's just strange.
So, Chris Long, how did he beat the tests? He beat the tests by just not testing positive at the predetermined time.
We let's see, tickets to give away and a code word. What do you want first, Brayton? Code word. Okay, let's get you the code word. It is TREE. Text that right now to 72881, TREE. Message and data rates may apply. You have until 9 o'clock to text the word in. Again, your chance to win $1,000. TREE, 72881 is our code word. In the National Win Cash Contest, we'll have another one for you an hour from now. We also are giving away tickets, a pair of tickets for Chris Young this Friday at Darien Lake Amphitheater. Minimum value of the prize is $80. They are courtesy of Live Nation. General contest rules apply. We're going to take a couple winners right now at 644-9878. Caller 5, you're going to the show. Pair of tickets. Caller 6, you're going to the show. You don't have to go with caller 5. Pair of tickets for you as well. 644-9878. Call right now for your chance to win. If you don't win tickets and you would still like to go to Friday's show at Darien Lake Amphitheater, you can purchase tickets. They are available right now at LiveNation.com. Well, it sure looks like.
Apple Tackle is more NHL ready. I mean, that's obvious. You know, look at the goals, including the one he scored yesterday. It was just off the charts terrific. And you know, he opened the tournament against two pretty good teams with two goals against Canada, and then followed it up with a hat trick against Slovakia. I mean, what we're seeing here is a guy who's matured more quickly. He's a big, strong kid and played the full season in the Pro League in Finland. So he's more accustomed to the pace and the physicality, even at the World Championship, where there is a lot of that.
Darren Dreger on Capo Caco, who has been very impressive.
At the World Championships?
Yes.
Had a, what do you have, like a four-goal game earlier in the tournament? I think he was having he's having a hell of a run, making people wonder if it's even possible that there's a discussion on the top pick in the draft, which everybody thought was going to be Jack Hughes.
A tradition unlike any other. Could the team with the number one pick take the guy that's number two? Could Patrick Laine go ahead of Austin Matthews?
Well, the reason, don't they bring it up in part, like when New Jersey took Heischer, was Nolan Patrick considered a one at that point? And
yes.
They went in the other direction.
Yes, I think so.
So I think maybe, and the Devils have the one this year and the Rangers are at two, so maybe that's part of the reason that New Jersey went and did this last time they had the number one, so maybe they don't take Jack Hughes, but anyway. And I guess Jack Hughes isn't exactly lighting it up at the tournament, and Kako is. So we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Your headlines? Bills are practicing today. The OTA is continuing down in Orchard Park. It is closed to the media. They made some roster moves yesterday. We've got details at WGR550.com. The NFL owners have told the competition committee they have their permission to tweak the pass interference challenge rule. Basically, it would take away the booth review aspect inside the final 2 minutes and make it just a coach's challenge on pass interference for the entire game. They're not going to change the overtime rules in terms of guaranteeing possessions on touchdowns. Let's see. Divisional playoffs are going to be 3 and 6:30 for your start times. Toronto and Milwaukee tonight in the NBA playoffs. The series is tied at 2. The Yanks beat Baltimore. The Jays lost to Boston. The Mets topped Washington, and the Bisons were blanked in Rochester. And Juwan Howard is the new basketball coach at the University of Michigan, taking over for John Beilein, who took the Cavs job. The headlines brought to you by Smith Boys Marine Sales, your number one source for boating in Western New York. We're going to get some calls, 803-0550. Hang on. We're also going to go to our Western hotline. We were just talking about Capo Caco and the NHL draft. The Combine is going to be in town next week. As always, we are going to go and chat with Ryan Kennedy, senior writer from The Hockey News, to talk a little bit about some of the prospects, see what might be there for the Sabres at 7. Ryan, it's Howard and Jeremy. Welcome to the show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So what do you think? Is there anything to this discussion about Capo Caco and whether he could be the number one pick as opposed to Jack Hughes?
It's certainly a discussion worth having. For me personally, I still think it's Jack Hughes because he's a natural center. And because of his frame and the natural gifts he has. I think there's still room for him to grow exponentially as a player, whereas Kakko seems a little more fully formed right now. I still think, you know, he'll project to be an excellent NHLer, but I'm conservative when it comes to the draft. I always prefer centers over wingers. Yeah. I just feel like that's the prudent move. And if you're the New Jersey Devils, you say to yourself, we could have Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes as our 1-2 centers for the next decade. That sounds pretty enticing.
But Kakko's a nice number two prize if that's the case for the Rangers then.
Oh, certainly. I mean, if you're Jeff Gorton right now, this is like the best case scenario where even if the Devils decide to go with Kakko, then you get Jack Hughes. Otherwise, I mean, Kaapo Kakko, we've seen what he does at international events. We've seen him break records for his age group in Finland's top league for men. I mean, he is just fantastic. His work around the net, his smarts, his creativity, you know, the physical package he brings. There's so much to like. This is one of the closest 1-2 draft combinations that I think we've seen in years. I would go back to Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin, where it's really kind of a fun choice for that first team. And, you know, if you're that second team, you're still going to get, you know, probably a future superstar.
Are these two guys in their own category when you look at the draft class? Are they in their own tier, basically?
Yes, I would say that's one tier, and then it gets pretty open from there. I would say from, you know, 3 to probably 8 at this point, there's going to be some very intriguing decisions to make because you have some other good centers from the WHL. You have more kids from the U.S. National Team Development Program that played with Jack Hughes. And then Bowen Byram, the defenseman out west, you have Vasily Podkolzin from Russia. It's really going to be an interesting board once it comes out.
Yeah, I wanted to get into some of the other guys out there and certainly work our way down to 7 where the Sabres are. But overall, we tend to ask people all the time, characterize a different draft class this year versus other years. How does it stack up? What are your thoughts on anything stand out in particular about this year's group?
Well, I would say, for me, the hallmark of this class is going to be that NTDP group. I don't think we've ever seen a group with such depth. There's arguments to be made whether this is the best NTDP team ever. I mean, you did have Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk and a whole bunch of other guys a couple of years ago. But, you know, I spoke to a scout during the second half of the season, and he said he wouldn't be surprised if every player that was eligible for the draft on that NTDP squad was actually selected this year, and that's unprecedented. I mean, usually you get about 10 to 12, but we could see, you know, 18 to 20, which is pretty incredible. And I think, especially in that high end, there's a very good possibility we could see 7 or 8 of these players go in the first round alone. And I think that is going to be the calling card of this draft class, is just how many impact forwards that Team USA had.
That's great for U.S. hockey, although, I mean, it's been year, right, Ryan? It's been a while now. You know, we've seen an increase in U.S.-born hockey players, right? We've seen an increase in first-round picks from the U.S. So I suppose we shouldn't be surprised, but it still is a nice feather in the cap for the national program and for U.S. hockey.
It really is, and this is a culmination of years of work. And actually, I just did an article for a recent issue about the American development model, which is about to celebrate its 10th anniversary. And you really have to applaud the efforts at the grassroots level that USA Hockey has undertaken in the past decade. And, we're seeing the fruits of their labor. It's not only in Minnesota, Massachusetts, Michigan. It's all over the place. I mean, we're seeing kids from, you know, a lot from New York State, but we're also seeing kids from California, Arizona, Florida, Texas, that are starting to come up, starting to make impacts, starting to get taken in the first round. Obviously, Austin Matthews is the best example. But Ryan Johnson is a player we might see in this year's first round. He was born and raised in California. So the diversity we're seeing geographically is a huge strength for Team USA because, obviously, the population is so big. And now, if they can attract a bigger pool of athletes to hockey versus some of the other big four sports, it's just a huge advantage that America has because of that population base.
We're with Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News. Seven, the Sabres are at seven. Who are we talking about? What kind of player? You can get into some specific names too, but what kind of player are we talking about at seven? Is it possible? Is it an impact guy? There's no way this guy's going to have to get seasoning. What are your thoughts at that point in the draft order?
Well, it's a nice slot to be picking in. I don't think you're going to get anybody who's going to help right away, but that's fine. I think it's most likely going to be a forward unless Jason Botterill and his staff really want a defenseman, and then you might see somebody like a Philip Broberg go a little earlier than projected, and that's fine. But I'm thinking it's probably going to be a forward. As I mentioned earlier, Vasily Podkolzin, the Russian power forward, he might be available then. There is the Russian factor. I think, if he was from Flin Flon or if he was from Edina, he'd probably be the number three prospect in this draft. But he does have two more years on his contract in Russia, so that might be a mitigating factor. But this kid is just a powerhouse. I think he's going to be an NHL fan favorite. He's really physical, plays with an edge, has a lot of skill, was really good at the World Juniors. And, Russian coach Valery Bragin does not play 17-year-olds. He just doesn't, no matter how good they are. But he trusted Podkolzin. Podkolzin was playing minutes late in games, in crucial games. He was back out there if he made a mistake, and I think that bodes really well for him. So for me, he's one of my favorite players in the draft class, and I'm really intrigued to see how high he goes. Two other names to keep in mind, both from the NTDP. The first is Trevor Zegras, who, if Jack Hughes wasn't on that team, I think we'd be talking a lot more about Trevor Zegras because he is explosive, he's offensively gifted, he's got a great motor, and, sometimes he played with Hughes, sometimes he didn't. He's also a center, and I think that he'll be a really good prospect. He's committed to Boston University for next season, so he's going to a great program, and I think he'll probably be available in that range. Mm-hmm. The other name to keep an eye on is Cole Caulfield. This is a player who is just so dynamic. He's an incredible goal scorer, set the program record this year. 4 goals. He's only 5'6". He could be that next Johnny Gaudreau, Alex DeBrincat type, but his name just keeps coming up the rankings because I think at this point in my talks with scouts, they say, look, a lot of people missed on DeBrincat and Gaudreau during their day.
Yeah.
Shame on you if you pass on Caulfield because of his size, because this kid gets it done pretty much every night. He was incredible at the World Under-18s for Team USA. He's headed to the University of Wisconsin next season, another team that is really good right now in terms of churning out NHL prospects under Coach Tony Granato. So I really want to know when Caulfield's going to go because he certainly has the talent to be a top-five pick, but we have seen that bias against size in the past where he could slide out of the top 10, even into the top 15.
It's interesting, and you were mentioned DeBrincat, and I was watching. He was having a good world championship too, but also we had this discussion years ago when Mitch Marner came up in the draft. I mean, he's not big at all, and look what he's been able to do in his NHL career, and look at what he's about to do in terms of payday.
Indeed, and the thing about guys like Marner and even Patrick Kane is, they're not that big, but can you catch them?
Yeah.
How many times did these guys actually get hit on the ice? And it's because they're so quick, not only on their skates, but in with their minds. And I think, with Caulfield, I don't see him getting plastered too much out there. The question's going to be, can he defend at the NHL level? But when you're on the wing, that's not as important as if you're a center. So I think, guys like Marner and DeBrincat have really opened some eyes where you say, okay, well, they can be 40 goal scorers in the NHL. They can be 90-point guys. And if you have the chance to snap them up, you probably should.
The Sabres have a second pick, Ryan. It's going to be at the tail end of the draft, first round, 30 or 31. Anything? How deep is the first round? What kind of prospects would we look at in the late first round?
Well, there's going to be some interesting names, and I think it really comes down to that sort of 20 to 40 range. It's kind of interesting, and this happens every year where we think of it as a first round and then a second round, but, the number 32 pick is no worse than the number 31 pick. We just happen to take a break on the Friday night. So I mentioned Ryan Johnson before. He plays for Sioux Falls in the USHL. They just won the league championship. He is a one-man breakout, as they like to say. You know, a great mobile defenseman. I think he'll be available in that range if the Sabres want him. Another name to keep in mind would be Vladislav Kolyachinok. He played in the OHL for the Flint Firebirds. Another defenseman came over in the import draft, and he has some nice size. He plays a great all-around game. Great character, great personality. Scouts really love talking to him. He'd be another option in that range. So, you know, if the Sabres go for a forward with that number 7 pick, maybe they go with a defenseman with that, you know, 30-31 pick, whatever it turns out to be. And I think those two guys would be pretty good options in that slot.
Before I let you go, why don't you get a little plug-in for the Hockey News draft coverage?
Yeah, draft preview is on newsstands now, and you can also find a bunch of content at thehockeynews.com. We have a great subscription service now where if you just want the digital edition, you can do that. If you want everything, we've got other packages. So check it out. We're super happy with what we're doing right now. The magazine itself is on brand new stock paper. We got more pages than ever, so it's a very exciting time for us.
You can follow Ryan on Twitter, too, at THN. Ryan Kennedy, senior writer for the Hockey News, joining us to talk a little bit about the draft. Again, the Combine going to be in town next week at Harbor Center. Ryan, thanks. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on with us this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Ryan Kennedy on the West Her Hotline. Pick of the week coming up in a moment. Also coming up, Father's Day. And we're giving you a chance to win something really cool for Dad just by going to WGR550.com and registering in our brand new contest. We're going to give away a brand new Weber grill from Value Home Centers, along with a prize pack and a gift card from Country Sweet Chicken and Rib Restaurant, just in time to help you out for Father's Day. All you need to do is enter now through June 9th for a chance to win this for Dad on the contest page at WGR550.com.
When we get back, got anything scheduled?
Your pick of the week.
Okay, my pick of the week is a comment from Dan Orlovsky. I'll tell you that when we were leading up to the Josh Allen draft about who to take at quarterback, I can remember specifically it was Dan Orlovsky that scared me the most on Allen. He joined One Bills Live yesterday. What's he think about Allen now? That's up next.
All right, thanks for joining us. 803-0550 to grab a line. Talk a little bit of football, Bills OTAs. We were talking about the pass interference challenges. We'll do more of that coming up at 9 o'clock. Talked a little bit of hockey this morning, getting ready for the Blues and the Bruins in the Stanley Cup Finals joining us. We'll start on Monday, by the way. If you want to hop in, you can always share an opinion at 803-0550 or 888-550-2550. And at 9, looking forward to talking to Darren Hackwood. He's with the CFL. He's the director of officiating. They've been doing PI challenges since 2014. So we'll talk about how it's gone up there, how often they get the challenges, what's the overturn rate, the rules they use. And I'm interested to hear what he says because there were stories from CFL guys who were watching the Rams-Saints game and watching the Nickell Robey-Coleman play and were like, you know, we can challenge that in the CFL. So we'll see how it's worked out for the Canadian League since it's coming to a National Football League team near you, by the way.
So Dan Orlovsky, do we have the audio from his tweet from April of 2018? I remember this specifically as we were gearing up for the draft. He was, this one highlight was the number one thing that scared me. You know, we were all trying to figure out who are they going to pick? Who's the best option? There are things to like about each guy. There are things to be scared about for each guy. And I can specifically remember this video that Dan Orlovsky posted about Josh Allen as the thing that scared me.
And Josh Allen's tape gets me a little concerned with that because sometimes he looks surprised by stuff. I want you guys to watch this Will linebacker for Oregon. So Wyoming is in basically a scat protection or empty protection, meaning the only people blocking are the five offensive linemen. The center, the guard, and the tackle have 1, 2, 3, and 4. So if those two guys blitzed, Josh Allen would be hot front side because one of those guys is going to be unblocked. Backside, the left guard and left tackle have 1, 2, 3. The running back is not in the protection. So if this linebacker blitzes, your hot backside. Josh Allen looks surprised by this. Watch. He looks surprised that he's hot backside. Oh, where do I throw the ball? To me, that you're not processing it. Look at the running back. He knows he's hot. Look how quickly.
You can stop right there. You can stop right there. The point is, this is what Sal talks about a lot. And this is what a lot of the Bills are saying about Allen, that the thing he has to work on. You know, accuracy can be a function of making the right throws. Not the throws that you make being more on target, but also making the right throws. And on that play, he's got a running back leaking out to the left side. That linebacker comes. This running back is uncovered. So Orlovsky's point when saying this is more than a year ago, is Allen gets to the line and he doesn't have the plan of the 1-2-3. Read this, this, and this.
Before the snap you're talking
about. Exactly. Yeah, right. Go to the line with a plan. All right, if this happens, then this. And he's that was his biggest criticism of Allen. Now, he wasn't an Allen is going to be a complete loser thing. Mm-hmm. His point was, this is a bit of a red flag for him.
Yeah, you shouldn't be that surprised all the time.
In the tweet, he said there's a difference between being a thrower and playing quarterback. Four days before, he had said accuracy is not the issue. So he goes on One Bills Live yesterday. You can find that on demand. You can find the full interview. And what he said was kind of the same thing, just that, listen, it's about the processing. It's about what Sal talks about, being on schedule. So it was a very interesting interview, very cool to hear Orlovsky, who a year ago said, this is the red flag, basically say Allen's first year was pretty good. It's still the thing that has to come along. So, you know, that's, I think, the consistent thing for Allen. Can he heave it? Yeah. Can he stand in the pocket and deliver? Occasionally, yeah, he did that. Maybe he ran too quickly because the line broke down too quickly, but that was always it. That was always the thing for me. Was Orlovsky saying there's a difference between being a thrower and a quarterback. And the step for Allen this year is about being the quarterback more than the thrower.
And you'd hope that he would have more awareness, you know, that he's had a year under his belt in the National Football League, that he's, you know, maybe he would be less surprised, to use his term, less surprised when he stepped to the line of scrimmage because he's had some valuable playing experience. He's gotten a leg up on reading NFL defenses and seeing what teams are doing to him. So I'd like to believe that. And, by the way, I think he does have better targets than he had a year ago. Maybe he'll seem like a more confident quarterback this year because he'll believe in some of the guys he's got around him in the passing offense. If the line is better, that wouldn't hurt either, by the way.
It's not necessarily about believing in the guys that he's throwing to. It's about kind of like believing or processing. It's about processing that system. I think Orlovsky's point wasn't that he wasn't going there because he wasn't sure, but that he didn't actually – it didn't occur to him. And that was the thing. Here's a backside. You know, the blitz comes off the left side, and the running back is there, and he didn't see it. And he didn't look. He didn't think. It was
– it's a matter of he's locking on to something in particular.
Yes.
He's not moving off of that.
Yes, and that sometimes – there was another – he used specific examples in going through tape of a seam throw that he tried to force in there, and it's a more of a gamble throw. And this is where Bills fans, I think, can kind of get, and myself included, like all of us, we watch Tyrod be super conservative to the point where if Allen tries that throw and doesn't get it, we are kind of pendulum swinging back the other way, like, I don't care, be aggressive, make that throw. There's the medium in the middle. And Allen's got to, over the course of his career, kind of learn, all right, that's aggressive, and maybe there are days I can sneak it in, but the right throw is here.
But I think how do I phrase this? I'm hoping I began to see the learning curve last year. I do think one of his issues, this is separate than what Orlovsky was talking about being surprised and locking on. But I do think one of his issues is that he likes to make the bigger play, even if it is squeezing it in, or if it's a deeper throw, which is a lower percentage chance of it being completed, then, hey, I've got McCoy in the right flat. I think he began to realize that sometimes you just have to take what is a better, easier, smarter play to take.
And maybe part of what Orlovsky had seen in college and what happened in year one, he didn't always run because he had no other choice. Maybe he got up there, first one not there, pull it down, I can make a play.
Which he could, by the way, with his legs.
And in year two, teams will be more prepared for that. So it'll be on Allen to make, all right, first one's not there, go to number two, go to number three, as opposed to just, you know, one and run.
803-0550 to join us this morning, 888-550-2550. Hey, don't forget to go to our website for your chance to win tickets to the Sound of Music kickoff concert. That's going to be up in Burlington, Ontario on June 8th. It will be a night filled with music from seven different bands. You can register for your chance to win through Friday, tomorrow, by going to WGR550.com.